All right, Alan Manwaring has been a congressional aide on Capitol Hill. He's been in the business world for 2 years. He was the assistant director of international studies at the University of Mississippi. He has a new organization called Consensus of the Americas, and I guess he'll tell us something about that. It will focus on networking with private foundations and think tanks and people in the world of business. His goal is to show corporations how good governance policies are in their long-run self-interest. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Alan Manwaring.
Thank you, John. I'm very pleased to be here and wanted to thank the Philadelphia Society and Bill Cunningham for inviting me to come. I went to graduate school in Philadelphia, and so I have sort of a warm place in my heart for Philadelphia and the Philadelphia Society, obviously, would be included in that. I also wanted to really sort of thank Alex Schauffelin. It's as a result of a conversation with him the other day that I'm actually here, and I have to compliment the conference that we actually had yesterday as well. Regarding these issues is extremely complementary with what we're talking about today, and they absolutely go hand in hand, obviously, and the conversation has been incredible and very interesting, and it's been a real pleasure to be here. And lastly, as far as compliments are concerned, I spend a lot of time sitting through events like this and sitting through dinner and lunch speeches by a multitude of people talking about the state of Latin American affairs, the state of what's going on in Latin American business, and so on and so forth. And I just have to compliment Ambassador Hughes. That is probably one of the best overall assessments of what's going on in Latin America that I've heard in a really long time. And I've listened to an awful lot of people who I know a lot of you have as well. And I'm still very impressed with that. I wrote down those seven things and intend to think about those things. Anyway, let me also give you a little bit more background about myself. I have spent a lot of time doing a lot of business management public policy consulting work. Me and some of my friends who were with McKinsey a while back decided to set up our own consulting firm and focus on doing a lot of business management public policy consulting work. And in the last couple of years, we've decided to sort of explore the idea of creating a consortium of Latin American think tanks or looking at ways to try to figure out how to connect corporations in the United States with Latin American think tanks that are trying to promote free enterprise and good governance principles. And so my day job is still consulting, and me and my cohorts in crime, which are with Patton Boggs and other illustrious groups like that, so to speak, are engaged in this effort. And we have been very honored to be working with the Atlas Foundation and other groups in them just helping us along and helping us develop ourselves. We feel very strongly that there is a dire need for more interaction between corporations and the development of good economic principles in Latin American business development, and we're looking at ways to try to figure out how to promote those things. But now let me talk about the issue at hand, so to speak. Intertwined economies of Latin America and the United States, and I was glad to hear Gerald share with you that he also sort of struggled with how to approach that a little bit. I guess, as he sort of concludes a little bit, we're not as intertwined as we could be, obviously, and it would be nice to be more intertwined, and there are probably ways to get there. I think we all are very aware, and especially we're well informed in our luncheon speech, that there's been sort of a shift in the United States' approach to a large extent in looking at Latin America in the last, you know, couple of decades. I think that Ambassador Hughes mentioned that in the 90s, there was, you know, the democratization was occurring in the 80s, then you had the consolidation process occurring in the 90s. And it seems like since then, we've decided to abandon some of the concepts of the Miami 1994 summit and the attempt to create an entire free trade zone from cone to cone and deal with the countries in Latin America individually. I'm not saying that's altogether a good or a bad thing, but that's sort of been the shift in our approach, and to look at trying to create individual free trade agreements with each of the individual countries. NAFTA is obviously the prime example of that. I happened to work on the Hill during the time that NAFTA was up there. And of course, you know, the Chilean free trade agreement, now Peruvian's on its way, hopefully. Colombia, Dominican Republic is on its way, and so on and so forth. And of course, the agreements we've been making with Brazil, we've I think got ourselves now into a situation where at least we seem to be approaching Latin America on more of an individual country by country basis, as opposed to simply looking at it as a conglomeration of one region. And again, I'm not sure that's not altogether a good thing for many reasons. But in looking at our approach and in looking at the development of how to analyze our economies in developing, it seems to me, and I think that the entire dialogue during most of the conference, oh, I'm sorry, more this way? Okay. The dialogue, okay, great. Is that better? Perfect, great. The dialogue during a lot of the conference has been centered around the concept of how do we get into these cycles of authoritarianism and liberalization and then back into the same cycles. How do we deal with that? How do we create economic growth, sustained economic growth and development in a lot of these Latin American markets? In their countries as well. And it was nice to hear Gerald, you know, talk about that a little bit as well in his presentation. And I also want to comment, when I say that we have to look to these countries to develop strong institutions, I'm not saying that we necessarily have to do that. And I think that's important, because I know Gerald mentioned that in his remarks, that we can't necessarily impose upon them strong institutions, but those institutions must be developed in order for sustained economic growth to really occur in these countries. And I'll bring some anecdotal comments to sort of talk about some of these issues. I was recently, I spent a lot of time in Argentina and Chile, among other countries in Latin America. And I remember being down there probably about a year and a half ago, and someone was talking about how come we can't get more economic foreign investment into this country right now. And I was with one of my cohorts in crime in this project. Travis works with Pat Boggs in Washington, and he spends a lot of his time responding to corporations that are basically saying, is it safe to go into this particular economy or not? And when you assess what's going on in Argentina, for example, the answer right now is, why would a foreign company want to go invest there? There's no reason, because they're not providing that economic environment for a company to feel secure and understand what the rules are going to be and how they're going to be able to make a profit. And a lot of that deals with these issues we've been discussing for the whole conference of good laws and providing sustained markets and things of that nature. But I just found that interesting, that the concept of it's important just to understand the concept that the corporations are not going to go in and put a lot of money into these markets unless they understand what the rules are going to be, because they don't know how to deal with that. A really good example of that also was a couple of days ago. Some of you may have been to this Hudson Institute lunch thing on Wednesday in Washington. Okay, you were there? Okay, they talked a lot about Nicaragua, and it was fascinating because I didn't really even know this. He put up a chart, and he had these great statistics on the difference between Nicaragua and other Latin American or other specifically Central American countries on growth and development and you know, foreign investment and things of that nature. And it was remarkable at how much lower Nicaragua was than the rest of Central America, for example. And he went on and talked about, and this, I think the person who did this was the former foreign minister of Costa Rica. And what he did was he said that one of the reasons, this is the main reason that this has occurred, is because in Nicaragua, for example, you don't know what's going to happen from day to day. It's not an issue of corruption, because you can account for corruption as a sunk cost if you're trying to make an investment. He said the issue is you don't know what's going to happen from day to day, because Ortega will say one thing one day, and in the very next 2 hours, he'll say something completely different, either behind the scenes or even in public, on how something's going to be in terms of the market issues and so on and so forth. So that is a huge issue in terms of foreign investment and in terms of being able to bring good markets into Latin America. But let me also go on. I think that what I wanted to do a little bit here is sort of suggest about, I think I came up with 9. Ambassador Hughes had 7 good points on what should be done, and actually you should defer to his much more than mine. But there's 7 things that I think that that we can think about or observe that would help promote a more intertwining of the economies or more economic development in Latin America. And the first is certainly going to be that, well, actually, I'm going to start with a quote, actually, that was in yesterday's Atlas seminar by Paul. Is Paul here? Anyway.
Yeah.
Paul said in one of his, I think it was one of the question and answers or one of the things that he talked about in his presentation yesterday, he said, the lack of liberty is the root of the problem. And, you know, think about that again. The lack of liberty is the root of the problem. And what he was talking about was these cycles that continue. And that is dead on. And so, you know, think about that in the context of these things. Again, back to my 9 things, I think. And the first 3 of these things are actually taken, well, almost all these things are taken from other people. Again, at that Hudson Institute lunch the other day, Carl Meacham, who is the senior professional staff that deals with Latin American affairs for Senator Lugar's office, who's the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, obviously, he said that he had 3 suggestions for the new administration, whoever that new administration should be. And here were his 3 suggestions. He said, first of all, the United States needs to develop as the cornerstone of its policy infrastructure development in Latin America, as far as its aid, so to speak, with the message that we have the will but not the wallet. And I think that that was sort of an interesting concept. Therefore, he turned around and said that his second one was to focus on more collaboration and the promotion of collaboration on infrastructure issues. And I think when he's talking about infrastructure issues, he's obviously talking about helping figure out ways for us to involve ourselves in the kinds of things that China and the kind of things that Russia are involving themselves, both in Latin America and especially with China in Africa. And we're just talking about straight infrastructure kind of things, road developments, bridges, and things of that nature, and so on and so forth. And he pointedly said, we need to also not just promote the United States promoting collaboration with ourselves, but also have the United States promote the collaboration between Latin American nations and the rest of the world, like Japan and things of that nature. That's an important thing for us to do. The third thing that he said, which I found, you know, very interesting, especially in light of the economic crisis we're in, is we need to focus on helping countries rely less on foreign investment and more on establishing a responsible tax base. And again, I think that's something that, you know, not that we don't want to continue to promote foreign investment, and we should do everything we possibly can to promote free trade and to work out free trade agreements. But we need to do that hand in hand with trying to promote these countries to establish responsible tax bases and not simply always depend upon foreign investment as their source of income, or whatever their commodity might be. The fourth thing, and this is sort of something that I just have observed over time, is it would be good for us to promote within Latin America and within the Latin American diplomatic corps, and this might, I don't want to be politically incorrect here, but a better understanding of how Washington works. And what I mean by that is when you look at the successes of Colombia and Peru specifically in achieving free trade agreements, or at least in achieving the ability to get to a potential free trade agreement, or in Plan Colombia, for example, you look at the way that their diplomatic corps operated. And I'll point to Ambassador Cepeda from Colombia as the example. When he approached his desires to move Plan Colombia forward and trying to lay groundwork for that, he worked with the staff on the Hill, both on the Senate side and on the House side, and spent considerable time in actually trying to work the staff. So often, the diplomatic corps feels like it's beneath them, for example, to not be greeted by the actual member of Congress or even someone higher than that when they come up to the United States. And that's a cultural issue, and I understand that completely. But if the Latin American diplomatic corps that are assigned to the United States, and the reason I even mention this in this kind of setting is because there are certainly people here who are young, who may go back to their countries and become these people, but make sure that we help promote the concepts and the understandings of how Washington works more, because what their objectives on increasing whatever they want to increase market-wise through the United States is cooperation will be much aided by their understanding of how to work the Washington system. I think that a lot of the problems that Colombia had after Cepeda left, and in terms of the free trade agreement, this is one component, certainly not the reason, was because they relied so heavily on one side of the aisle, so to speak, as opposed to another side of the aisle. They left themselves in a situation where it became a political issue as opposed to simply an economic issue. And so there's a lot of things we need to keep in mind when working in these systems. A fifth issue, or a fifth thing, is to promote a shift of a dialogue away from having history debated as an issue of current public policy. And again, this may not be a politically correct kind of thing to say, but I've noticed over time that you go to certain places, and I'll use a situation that I had in Buenos Aires probably 2 years ago with a group called Pensar, a fantastic organization down there. They were hosting a dialogue where they had congressmen, ministers from the State Department, so on and so forth, come and discuss the issues of how Argentina can move forward to become more economically solvent. And it was being hosted by a member of the media, who I was told was the Larry King of Argentina. I have no idea what his name is. Anyway, he ended his comments. He ended the whole thing, because in Argentina, they tend to spend a lot of time discussing what's happened in the past as an issue of public policy as opposed to an issue of history. And he said, we have got to, as a society, get beyond doing that. He said, and this is before Pinochet had passed away, he said, if the presidents of Chile can live in the same neighborhood, bachelor obviously, but if the presidents of Chile can live in the same neighborhood with Pinochet, then certainly, we can live together and try to move forward as opposed to always looking backward. Anyway, the sixth issue is we need more UFMs. And that's the University Francisco Marquins. I went down there a while back, and I just have to say I was so impressed with the university, not just in terms of the fact that they existed and in terms of the fact that they are creating a great curriculum with economic understanding of their country, but they're providing students in that country a place to go to undergraduate school that would otherwise have left. They're keeping a brain trust in their own country, which will lead to these developments of a good civil society and good infrastructure in their country to promote economic development. And that is huge. And that model is incredibly important to think about. Seventh, and I know I'm going to wrap up here in a second. Seventh, promote a better understanding of the Spanish model of European Union integration in the Spanish model of their integration of the European Union. And I wish I could dwell on that, but think about that for a while. And think about the European Union in relationship to what Latin American countries try to do right now. The European Union started as simply trying to promote coal and steel cooperation, and then grew from there. Sometimes I think in Latin America, they tend to try and be more grandiose in their desires and then try to do it the other direction. But anyway, just think about that. And lastly, understand the relationship between security issues and economic development issues are extremely relevant. Corporations have got to understand that there's a correlation, and I think that Gerald hit on that very well too. There is asymmetrical warfare going on. We need to understand what that means. We need to understand that that means that there are absolutely folks out there who are intent on creating failed states. And we need to understand what that implies in our desires to try to promote good and free markets. And those are the big issues. It all really boils down to creating an environment of economic investment, both foreign and domestic, through the rule of law. And it's, if our economy is to become intertwined, we need to have these kinds of things occur. With the mantra of democracy is not enough, we need to go beyond democracy and get into these institutional issues, which Paul actually referred to as far as being his definition of democracy. And the last thing I'll say is to try to illustrate this. And this, again, doesn't come from me. This comes from a worker at the Philadelphia Independence Hall. He said the most important thing that ever occurred in this hall was not on July 4th, 1776. It wasn't even on September 17th, 1787, which is when the Constitution was adapted. He said it was on March 4th, 1797, when John Adams was inaugurated as the President of the United States. Because that was the first time in history where there was a switch of power in the way that occurred. And that was the cornerstone of infrastructure, of rule of law, of all these things that bring a democracy the ability to provide liberty. And that's what we need to keep our eyes towards. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, and now we can open up for questions.